This is John Leeson. You would not believe it. It is the voice of K9 welcoming you to Gallifrey Public Radio. Please listen.
I'm Josh Liston from On The Bubble Podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Whitten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
Charles Martin.
I got their first album, The Salty Butter.
And Haley Malley.
I used to be right next to a train track.
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers. We do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning. Welcome to episode 309 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where it could be said that you're not really the Doctor until you find yourself on a doomed craft hurtling through space. But hey, bonus points if there are at least three ways to kill you. I'm Keir.
I'm Jay.
I'm Haley.
And I'm Charles. This week we reached the midpoint in the 11th modern series with the hospital drama in hyperspace, The Serenga Conundrum. A full roster of supporting characters, an adorably terrifying alien, and enough shiny white corridors to please any hardcore sci-fi fan. But did all the moving parts on this series mesh gears as Chibnall had hoped? Dun, dun, dun!
There's a lot going on in here. It was a very frenetic episode. By design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm seeing a whole bunch of people with very mixed reactions to it, and quite a number of them are just sort of, okay, midpoint in the series, episode, some danger, a monster,
I think some people are forgetting that not every episode is like a series-defining episode. Some episodes are just, this is the adventure this week.
I agree with Haley that some of the reaction has been like, I want every week to be Rosa. No, you don't.
No.
I promise you, you don't. That's not, and besides, That's not what this show has ever
right.
been like.
Yeah, that's just it. You've got to, aside from the fact that I feel like I feel like over the course of the last 24 hours, so I felt a little bit on an island for just saying that I really didn't have any problem whatsoever with this story.
No, me neither.
But it just seemed like there were so many people that are expecting it to be, this earth-shattering. They want it proven to them week in, week out that this needs to be appointment television. But at the same time, there are organizations out there. I won't mention them by name. You can find them just by searching for the phrase, please tell Doctor Who to stop reminding us that it's Doctor Who. That was their running headline.
Yeah, because shows shouldn't do that. They should never remind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. I want to watch something and be completely unclear as to what the heck I'm watching. That's my goal.
Yeah.
But all right, so we'll go around the horn here. Charles, it sounds like you're kind of in the camp with me that this was a perfectly acceptable, perfectly enjoyable story. Maybe not, you know, the end all be all, but it by no means registered on the suck scale.
My thought on this is simply this. This, the Serenga Conundrum, this is typical Doctor Who. This is typical Doctor Who. This is baseline Doctor Who right here. So
yes, there should be about 8 of these episodes a series.
Yeah.
And then about 6 to 7 that are much better.
Well, right. Here's the thing. There will be one like mid-season standout this season. Probably mm-hmm. looks like it's Rosa. And then like 2-part finale that's going to be really solid. Season opener is going to be really solid. And there might be one turd in there somewhere.
Yeah.
This was not a turd.
You nailed it. You completely nailed it right there.
Jay?
Yeah, no, I'm of the same mind. It was a lot of fun. It was, yeah, I know we tend to use romp as a kind of euphemism for fluff, but not a lot of substance. I don't even feel like this was actually that kind of romp. There wasn't really a whole lot of like stuff that I expect to see moving forward mm-hmm. again. I don't think that there was anything world changing in this, but it was still a solid episode. It was still a lot of fun.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take that because yeah. there's the critique again. You know, this is this was
the Slitheen episode.
I wouldn't even go that far down because the Slitheen were comedic to a near fault at times. And I don't think, other than just the physical appearance of the Pating, that it was necessarily ever supposed to be cast as funny.
Right. It's definitely not funny. It's mm-hmm. Stitch meets Nibbler.
Yeah.
It's
so all right. So with some of the criticisms or some of the poo-pooing that had gotten me so riled up today. Some of the things that I was having a point of contention with were the fact that they were saying that there were too many characters, that the story didn't warrant as many characters as were crammed into this vessel. Okay. Go ahead.
I think the only character you might have been able to drop would be the pregnant guy. And that, that really helped Ryan deal with his relationship with his father.
I thought the pregnant guy was absolutely vital because it reminded us once again that lots of planets have a north.
Okay. Yep. And that we have to sort of change our base framework of understanding. I thought if any one of the cast could have been sort of incorporated into lines and interaction with other characters, it was probably the android, Ronan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
could have dropped him.
Although, I mean, it allowed Yaz to have her kind of, you know, pew-pew, police shoot-em-up stakeout moment around the antimatter drive and all. But nonetheless.
I liked him better than Chip from a certain past episode that shall not be named at the
moment. Okay. So, I mean, as far as the overall, I liked the relationship between Astos and Mabley. I mean, you obviously, if they've had who knows how many turns on this vessel where they have been the sole crew, and they've developed a great working relationship. Mabley was not a wilting flower character, but she was not a bold character. She did not suddenly have this moment of, oh, it was within me all along. It was very realistic in the fact that she made some progression to be able to mm-hmm. trust in her abilities.
I agree.
But it wasn't some sort of a literary launch forward for the character.
Well, and it went from like she was probably, you know, the student or intern newer to this position than Astos, and then when he was gone, she had to step up. And
this was only her second tour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Whereas Astos had been like dozens. I can't even remember how many he said that he'd been on, but like he was the seasoned veteran. Whereas Mabley was this was like her second day. So yeah, it's understandable that she was like, no, I don't know how to do it. The first thing that we hear her say is something about like, I can't even find the med tag. That's how rubbish I am at this.
Right. Yeah.
Also, Astos, I think we should quickly mention, has acted with Jodie Whittaker mm-hmm. before in Adult Life Skills.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Which, if you haven't seen it by now, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
We've got a long hiatus coming up. You can watch it then.
Very true.
Maybe. Yes.
Too soon, Mally. Too soon.
Now, what about the Ciceros? You know, we've got our general, and you know, our ace veteran pilot. Who's in the book of what was the what, The Book of Celebrants.
The Book of Celebrants.
Yeah. Again, great little classic Whovian aspect of making reference to some extended part of the universe that we will probably never hear of again. But it's in there just to sort of, you know, fill scene and sort of establish, you know, some interest.
And give the Doctor the chance to be like, no, I'm not in that. It was a volume. Yeah. Not a chapter.
That was a terrific line. Speaking of which, let me just say, this episode was full of terrific lines. Mm. All of the previous episodes of this series have been full of terrific lines. If you don't think the plots have been all that heavyweight, okay, I'll go along with that. But you can't argue this dialogue. This dialogue's fantastic.
Yeah, it has been. And I will also say, since we're just referring to some of the components of the episodes rather than the story itself, visually, this ship was gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Oh, yeah. Now, this is corridors, people. Yeah. This is how you do corridors.
You could tell there were at least three.
Yeah.
Three different ones.
Do you guys think they were kind of making a nod to classic Star Trek? Because we had, you know, the captain, the engineer, and the doctor.
Clever.
I mean, maybe, in a sense.
Okay.
Did you guys notice the images of the previous monsters that flashed super fast? I only caught this on the second time.
I did not.
No,
I did not. I guess I had not been at that point. There were certain aspects. I will admit, when things got particularly frenetic, I did have some difficulty keeping tabs on everything that was being presented to me. Both dialogue and visually, and trying to process it all. I got much more out of it the second time around, third time around, but first time through, I was actually concerned as I was watching it that I was missing things that might be critical.
Yes. Well, not only that, but in some cases, again, subtitles can sometimes help to catch, because some of that dialogue, not only northern, but fast.
Yes. Very fast.
Yes.
And some crosstalk. Yeah.
But what I was talking about is when Mabley is about to, she's going through a roll of possible monsters, and before she gets to the Pating, Cybermen, Ood, Rexcor, Cephalopatorian, Centauran, Silent, Silurian,
okay,
Weeping Angel, and one more, and I can't think of what the other one was. What? Zygon.
Did put the Zygons in there. Okay. I wonder if they provided them in alphabetical order. I'll have to go back and look at the transcript. That would be a very, very medic thing to do.
Well, you wouldn't have gotten to the Zygon then, because Pating comes first.
That's true. Well, let's take a look at this little bugger. You can go ahead and you make your jokes and things, but by and large, a lot of the public response to this little beast has been great. Because, again, DNEG killing it with their effects work.
Killing it with their effects.
Even some of the exterior stuff with the ship was beautiful, beautiful
work. Beautiful stuff. Yeah, yeah. This is no wheel in space, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well they can't all be wheel in space. As far as the formidability of the little beast, or at least just the, I'm not going to say plausibility, but just the acceptability of saying, okay, little monster, you know, going out to try and devour energy sources, immune to the vacuum of space, and so on and so on and so on. All the things that they pile on to this little tick of a creature.
Yeah.
Does it sat fine with everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like when they do villains that aren't malevolent by nature. They're just destructive. Mm.
All CGI, all completely CGI characters are always a crapshoot of whether you're going to buy it or not. Mm-hmm. I thought, I think DNEG is really doing some terrific work on this in this area. The expressions, which admittedly the Pating has a kind of a limited palette of.
Yeah.
But
mouth open, rawr. Mouth closed. Mouth open.
Yeah, rawr. Rawr is pretty much it. I thought it was very well done. I like the idea of short nemeses.
Okay.
I like that. You're absolutely right, Haley. The amorality of this thing was another fascinating aspect, not often covered in Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. Is I'm not evil. I'm just, this is what I do.
Yeah. But, and again, it gives the Doctor another opportunity to say, look, slaughtering the thing is not necessarily the path to take. Then again, she couldn't. I mean, the thing seemed to be nigh upon indestructible. But
and this was, and I've heard people say, well, where was the conundrum? You need a dictionary, because that was a conundrum. How do you kill something that can't be killed? How do you at least dispose of it when it's resist, when you can't touch it?
Right.
And so on and so on. It was a conundrum, I promise you.
And the fact that they couldn't stop the ship from its course, you know,
they just piled. This is typical Doctor Who, and that is throw people into a situation that sometimes seems rather contrived. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Part of the tradition, and then lay on the problems. Just keep laying them on and watch how they solve it.
The only thing that it was missing was the D-bag representative from management. You don't understand clearly, Doctor. This is the way it's always been done, and this is what the company, you know, we didn't have that one.
I do want to say, we'll come to it later, but I, you know, it's not that I don't have any nitpicks about this. One of them I'll just bring out right now is that when the ship didn't blow up the way the company expected it would, and then it finally showed up, they should have opened fire.
Or at least have it escorted in under careful watch. I think the only thing, and I actually went through probably about, it was on the third pass. I was looking for anything where I'm thinking, you know what? I really wish that they had done X, Y, Z. And it finally occurred to me that it was the final, well, it wasn't the final. It was the first moment when Eve took control of the ship. I was expecting something, because they did it as just a quick camera shake on the interior to say, whoa, okay, I got control of it now. And it was, you know, they were sort of giving us the sort of the implication through their pseudoscience and techno babble that it was a Pacific Rim sort of a mind merge with the ship and so forth. But I wanted something where they quick cut to an exterior of the ship so I can see the trajectory change.
And all those asteroids that's having to zip and zap through.
Precisely. But this.
Well, they had a CG character. They couldn't afford
exactly.
That.
They ran out of money.
Yeah.
They ran out of money.
Well, also, they made good use of their CG character, because there were a lot of times where you didn't see the guy. You just like heard him working through the duct, or you saw the destruction in his wake or something like that.
Yeah. This was an all studio story for a start. And so arguably this was probably the cheapest story that we've seen so far. That's a reality in Doctor Who, and if you look back on the past history of all studio base under siege type stories, this one was actually pretty great.
I liked it. I liked it visually. I liked the pace. I liked the fact that you had, as we mentioned, multiple layers of problem to work through that were interconnected. I even liked the comedic aspect of adding Yoss in there because of the beats that hit, but was actually also added to the overall concerns that had to be dealt with. And it did provide for a bonding, if short of fist bump, moment between Graham and Ryan.
Yaz, I thought, actually got some, she got a real scene, you know, she got some real stuff to say. I liked it.
Yep.
My main complaint, actually, is that the Doctor took way too long to figure out that it was energy that the creature was after.
Yeah, that seemed like that was kind of sitting right
She was
there.
Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Conveniently.
Also, all right, I got to flag this. Look, if Time Lords now have, or this Time Lord has an exo spleen.
Is it exo or ecto?
No, it's exo. All right, spleen.
I think one of the transcripts actually read, or one of the closed captions actually read ecto spleen.
Well, that would make more sense because
what do you think the coat's covering?
Yeah, I know, right? Ugh. Don't take off the coat at any point for this season, Jody, please. If you have an exo spleen, I don't want to see it.
What do you think's in the fanny pack?
Well, see, that's not a fanny pack. That's just how they look.
She's wearing a fanny pack correctly, actually.
Well, we should also correct. These are bum bags. they're not fanny packs. Let's use the proper vernacular, because otherwise we're talking about bits that we don't want to discuss.
Well,
okay, I have a question. I only watched the episode once, so maybe I missed this. Astos alluded to there being something additional wrong with the doctor, like, oh, he suspected that. Was that resolved?
No.
No, and okay. nor was the exospleen.
Maybe.
She was still grabbing it, right all the way through the episode.
Hernia.
I think it's one of those things that kind of got thrown out there that if somebody else decides to pick up on it, they can. Otherwise, it's just going to get swept under the rug. And it's like, oh, yeah, no, she healed fine.
Mm. Well,
I don't think I buy that.
How do you stand directly on a mine and live to tell the tale?
It was a sonic mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the sonic mine, that's just, bad radio. What is that? What?
I assume it's one of those non-lethal deterrents they've been working on.
Yeah, I guess it's just there to lay out if you're scavenging on somebody else's patch.
I see.
So stabilize.
She did say it was somebody's idea of a nasty joke. So yeah. Which implied that it wasn't fatal, but
yeah, it just leaves you there with your intestines scrambled, because that's fun.
What's funny to me actually is that the end of last week's episode was, we're Team TARDIS, now let's go do amazing things. Junk planet, okay.
Well, I like the fact that there was the line they kind of opened with where the doctor was like, didn't I take you to do this thing?
Yeah.
And it kind of implies that, yeah, there's been stuff that's happened since then. Time has passed. They're more of a cohesive kind of team now. And so it gives you a little bit of that wiggle room to where you're like, well, but these two were kind of dealing with this at the time. Yeah, but it's been 3 weeks since then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of lazy writing to an extent where you don't have to solve all the problems. You just assume that they got taken care of. But at the same time, it gives you that chance to kind of step back and say, okay, I can put the rest of that on hold. Let me focus on the story that I've got in front of me right now, because the rest of it, I assume, is going to get taken care of later.
Yeah, I don't need all threads to be tied off neatly for me. If some of it is giving me just establishing a more textured story. I always enjoy if I pick up a book and it's dropping me into midway through a scene, and I'm doing a little bit of legwork to try and establish my bearings and things. I enjoy that. That's the kind of a storytelling style I enjoy.
I love the world building lines that don't actually tie to anything. I mean, think of Star Wars and how Han Solo references Lando's maneuver at the Battle of Tanab. Have you ever read the story about what that actually was? It's so much better not knowing. So much better.
Well, I was very interested in the fact that a creature creator got a credit. This has almost never happened in the history of the show.
Uh-oh. It's the birth of the next Terry Nation estate.
Tim Price is one of the writers in the writer's room, apparently. And he got the creature design and the naming credit for the Pating.
Because he had just watched Lilo and Stitch.
And Nibbler on Futurama.
Yeah, we didn't see what that thing pooped out.
Yeah. If it eats antimatter, then it must poop. Wait. I just love the little happy, satisfied, warm belly post-Thanksgiving grin.
Yes.
Had drifting off into space. It was just...
I know. You just wanted to give him some belly rubs, right?
Yeah. Or just say, no, it's okay, buddy. Football will be on for the rest of the day. Just relax on the couch.
You just sit. Enjoy. Yeah.
You went back for thirds.
I have to say, I love the doctor's explanation of antimatter. I loved her excitement, her joy about explaining it. Everything that went into that, it filled me with so much joy, because it was going back to the old, it's like, we're here to teach kids about stuff. And it kind of tied all that in. And it was just, that was so quintessentially the doctor. Like, it's like, look how amazing the universe is. Look at this amazing thing that we're doing here. It's right here in front of you. And it's, that just fits so well for me.
I would also like to add that explanation is more or less on par with actual science. What?
I also really liked the design of that collider. Like, it looking very much like a DNA-type helix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool looking. Yeah.
There was, I'm not going to get too nerdy about this, but the explanation of how much energy it generates wasn't correct. But all the discussion about how it's done, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that aspect, Jay, as you're saying, that wonder and that fascination with the holistic complexity of the universe as it stands, we've seen that everywhere from Hartnell through Tennant. They've each had moments where they've just sat back and just taken a moment to pause the scene and say, "Would you just look at this?" I mean, this is the stuff of creation and just reveling in it for a little while. I almost wish that scene had been given a little bit of an extra beat to last, but so be it. Everybody's on a clock.
Did you notice by the way that this story is the opposite of 42? 42 is about a ship that eats energy from the sun, and the sun gets mad about it. This is the opposite.
It's true,
and equally frenetic.
Yeah. So, were there any other either technical aspects or components of the story, scenes, moments that you thought were particular gems, or ones that you'd like to say, I'm really glad that was in there?
When the general said something along the lines of, like, nobody's going to die today, including me, I felt like that was a very doctor thing to say. And I thought it was interesting that the general said it.
You might not want to make statements like that because that's going to get cashed in soon.
Yeah.
But I appreciated that final scene between General Cicero and her brother. That was nice. That was really nice. It was actually, a lot of people say, this episode didn't move me. Apparently you've not had a relative pass away on you, because that scene is quite moving, actually.
I think all of the comedic hits fell in at just the right time. This was actually a great episode for Bradley Walsh to be able to use straight comedic timing. Insofar as we've been really impressed with a lot of the dramatic stuff that he's been pulling forward that we didn't think he was necessarily even capable of. But when he got down to things like I've seen every episode of Call the Midwife, and he's descended from an old earth nurse, and him taking digs at Ryan for wasting time on YouTube while he's learning valuable skills.
I love the name of the old earth hero, Avocado Pear.
Yeah, that was a nice touch.
I had to work that through for a little while. I thought, did I miss a punchline in here someplace? Or are they just goofing?
No, that was fun. I don't know. For some reason, the interactions between Ryan and Graham really worked for me in this episode.
Yeah.
You can see that there's been progress. They're getting along better. They're not quite to the point where Ryan's ready to fist bump him, but we talked about it last week, how, the possibility that since Shibnall wasn't going to be, having a writing credit on these episodes, that the characters might wind up stagnating, that those storylines that have been established might, have to just, have to leave, stay there for a minute. But this really did a good job of exploring Ryan's character and him understanding. It's like, I completely understand why my dad left at that point, because that I wouldn't be ready for this. And it was kind of him opening up to that. And it developed his character even more. And I really, really liked that. And them joking around about, like, can you imagine what would happen if your nan was here? Yeah, she'd be laughing her butt off at both of us. It's like, it felt so right for these characters.
Yeah. And that nice scene that he had with Yaz also worked very well. I particularly want to call out, though, the scene between the doctor and, what was his name?
Astos,
thank you. Between the doctor and Astos, where he's like, no, you're wrong. You're being selfish.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You read
this
my mind.
This was one of the rare, talking to's that the doctor didn't just brush off. She stopped and she went, Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
I like the fact that this is not the first time in the five episodes we've gotten to date where we have seen this doctor walk back from a stance that she's taken. And mm-hmm. it's been done in such a way that it's not showing – it's not being presented as this is a fallible character. You know, the doctor is not a god. Look, she screws up right and left just like the rest of us. And they're not trying to cast it in that sort of a light, but they are saying that this is still a journey. The doctor is not at the end of it all looking back and saying, well, I've got the answers. Go, keep hitting me with your best problem and I'll keep working it out.
Yeah.
This is still a work in progress for the doctor as well. And I was really appreciative of seeing that. Well, all in all, I mean, I think we got more out of this than a lot of people were giving it credit for.
I will also add that I agree with my friend Keith Topping, who've written a beautiful review of this episode. And he said that, oh, I am never getting pregnant, might be one of the best one-liners in the entire series. And I agree.
I don't know. I think there are some better zingers in there. I don't know.
I did actually laugh out loud when the doctor said, funny, I'm normally the one defusing the bomb.
That's true.
That was funny.
I will say there's one thing that I would say that I'm still waiting for at this point. Granted, in five episodes in, you say, wow, it's only been five episodes, but it's also the midpoint in the season here. With our traveling friend / companion triangle that we have not had a lot of moments for Graham and Yaz.
True.
To connect. And I feel like I need that to really know that the team has gelled, because I see two legs out of that have gotten very strong. You know, Ryan and Yaz definitely have a connection. They respect each other. They work well together. They know how to communicate to each other as contemporaries and as peers and as friends, past and present. And everything is bonding well, or at least repairing well, between Graham and Ryan. But I'm not getting that last leg of the triangle.
I figured out why he won't fist bump, by the way.
Hmm.
Major spoiler, but it's sheer fan speculation, and here it is. You notice how we haven't really openly discussed his dyspraxia in a while? I think he'd miss.
Oh, punch him right in the jaw.
We
have been getting a little bit away from the dyspraxia, though.
Yeah.
Well, they're careful not to give him anything that would suddenly require more coordination than he was
cutting
established
an umbilical cord.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Under duress? I don't know.
Well, it was only one of the two, so.
Well, there's this big thing about doing it simultaneously. Anyway. Okay. Go ahead, Jay.
I was just going to say, I think that with what we know about next week's episode, I expect Yaz's character to be fleshed out quite a bit. And I'm thinking that at that point, we might actually kick off the whole Graham and Yaz combining thing, because it seems like she's going to be more of a focal point at that point. Mm-hmm. And so it would make sense to kind of have him be like, wow, you know, I never knew this about you. Tell me more about your personality or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it would kind of lend itself to exploring that character a bit more. So hopefully they pick up on that.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not, none of us would consider this to be a poor episode. Would you say, though, that to date that this is your least favorite story of the season?
No, because I think this was better than episode two was, and I enjoyed episode two still. Mm.
The ghost mon- that's the ghost monument?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd put this at a solid number three for me, actually.
I think I'm going to put that exactly where Jay did. I haven't totally made up my mind, but I think I like this one better than last week.
Okay. Noted.
So we're halfway through the series now. You know, we've gotten a chance to learn our characters, to learn our companions, to learn our doctor, that kind of thing. How do we feel that we're doing it up to this point? Like, I mean, we've gotten a lot in the last 5 weeks. Like, how do we think that Chibnall is doing with his first run?
I've enjoyed the series to date considerably because of the variety of presentations where we've taken our characters that we feel like we're getting to know, and we're getting an opportunity to put them through the official, you know, finger quotes, Doctor Who episode ringer, you know, on planet, off planet, future, past. We're like ticking all the boxes here.
Yeah.
And we're getting stories that while there may be a couple of corners that need to be sanded down a little bit, or a couple of areas where we want the color to be a little bit brighter or whatever the analogy for corrections may be. But at least among us, you know, scrappy few, we've been enjoying them across the board. So I've got a very good feel for this season. I think one of the things that I'm enjoying about it is that I am finding less to nitpick than I might have in the past, where I've said, you know, really enjoyed the story just fine. I call it a 7 out of 10, but the three things that kept it from being at a 10 out of 10 were, you know, this, this, and this. I'm not even approaching it from those perspectives anymore. I'm going into these saying, you know what, huh, I wasn't expecting them to do this little moment or play around with this aspect or give a brand new doctor an opportunity to do these three things or whatever. I'm pleasantly surprised by everything that I'm getting along the way.
I've found a couple people that are having trouble locking on to Jodie as the new doctor. And one of them recently I was talking to said that they think that it's because the previous doctors have always had such big personalities, and that the stories in this series have been so good that they feel like, because Jodie's kind of playing it, at least in their words, a little down, like kind of toning it down just a touch, not so over the top charismatic like Tennant or something like that. And when the stories become so very good, that the stories are kind of becoming center stage, whereas the doctor is typically the one that we're glomming onto, and we'll deal with crappy stories because we have the doctor. Whereas these, it's like the stories are so spectacular that the doctor's kind of getting overshadowed. And I feel like it's the moments like you were talking about, Keir, when the 13th doctor gets called out on, you know, being selfish, and she's like, you know what, you're absolutely, those are the moments I feel like that really make this doctor. Those are the ones that really set her apart from anyone else, when it's not this grand standing kind of like, oh, I've had this figured out the whole time and watch how I unravel it in such a clever fashion. It's, hey, you know what? I'm learning this just like everybody else, and I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. And that's something that I don't remember seeing in the doctor very often, if at all. And it's very refreshing, honestly, and I love that about this doctor.
We might have gotten shades of it in the past. I think
I think the fifth doctor had.
Yeah, but in this particular instance, boiled down in this iteration, the only way that I can describe it, and I think this kind of fits, or at least it satisfies it within my head, this doctor is eyes wide open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's not just a matter of rediscovering, you know, how interested that they are in everything that they're involved with and the impact and the experiences that they are bringing to her friends, and being able to be aware of that and to watch that. But it's also being eyes wide open to those things that she still needs to address, correct, learn, incorporate. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of
still figuring herself out. Yeah.
Well, realizing that it is a constant, that you're never done learning yourself.
Yeah. And I thought this was an awfully Tennant-esque episode. And I thought Jodie did a pretty Tennant-esque job in here. And that's, you know, for me, that's high praise. But this is the episode where I thought they're not making the I'm still figuring myself out thing front and center. This is just about totally on her feet here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Haley?
I think I've said several times that I'm really enjoying this doctor. Mm-hmm. I heard somebody or saw somebody complain today on Facebook that they're doing a female version of Tennant's doctor, which I don't think is true. Like, she's got a different take on the character than Tennant. And
yeah,
I don't know. I think she has one facial expression she makes that always reminds me of Tennant, but her performance is different.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
When Tennant was on his game, and or when Ten, I should say, was on his game, there was a sort of a humorous, smug behavior to it. The sort of the you see what I did there, kind of a kind of a read. And I don't think we've ever really gotten that from 13.
I think Tennant's doctor was more reckless than Jodie's doctor is. In general.
Well, he was like Jodie in this particular story. He was very confident that no matter how many problems there were piled on, that he was going to get through it. And was very, we're going to all get through this. Okay. I'm thinking particularly of the Starship Titanic episode, you know, the one.
Mm-hmm.
And so it reminded me a bit of Tennant, but you're right. You're absolutely right that Jodie's her own doctor. There's shades of previous doctors that pop up from time to time. Like, we didn't get that in Capaldi's era. I'm afraid we did, like, constantly. So this one, I thought her tone was exactly right. And also, for nitpickers, she's not doing the big arm movement with the Sonic anymore. So you can stand down on that as well.
Yeah, yeah. It sort of comes, rather than arcing over the head, it's now sort of from the shoulder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, are we ready to jump into the news?
I think so.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's make sure that everybody feels really good about the fact that Chibnall was completely wrong. And that there will be returning characters that we'll be able to enjoy that we thought we would never hear from again. Moffat characters live on, and we will get to see – oh, wait, no. Hear from them for as long as we enjoy. Our Paternosters.
Gay.
Yeah.
Yay.
This is – I'm super delighted by this because a lot of people would wanted to see – these guys in their own TV series. And I always thought that might be a kind of a bad idea because then you have to really explore what they're all doing there and why they haven't all been lynched by the society. And that's kind of an area they've always papered over up until now. So there's two reasons I love the idea of a Paternoster audio series. Number one is you continue to not have to deal with that. And then secondly, I am so happy for these people not to have to spend 5 hours in the makeup chair.
Yeah.
So happy.
Yep. I loved when we had an opportunity to have Strax interact with Jago and Lightfoot and that little gift, a year and a half or so back. We've gotten to know Dan Starkey very well and adore the passion that he pours into his character work. When you allow him to do that in a recording booth, as you said, Charles, away from the makeup chair and just be able to drop in and revel in the character without having to worry about the prosthetics and don't over emote because you might pull at the latex or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You get a hell of a lot of fun, and being able to allow Caitlin and Nev to join in that as well. I just want to know now. I'll have to go back and take a look at the statement again. Did they announce the writers roster as well?
I don't know, but we haven't actually mentioned what it is they're doing. We're talking about Big Finish Audios.
Oh, well, GPR listeners know. If we're babbling about
this. Anytime Cure blathers on for a long period of time, it's because of Big Finish.
Yes. Or a day that ends in a Y. So, yeah.
Well, but the thing that really gets me excited about this is the fact that it's not just the Paternoster gang, though. It's also Alex Kingston. It's also Louise Jameson. I mean, we're getting River Song back. We're getting Leela back. We're getting Kara. We're getting Ace.
Yeah, I mean, Lisa Barham.
They're really going deep with this, and I'm like, this is going to be fantastic.
Yeah,
huh.
Yeah. These are some of my favorite people you know, that I've interviewed them. I know them. This is an all, as far as I'm concerned, this is a super all-star lineup.
Oh yeah. And I mean, the list or the name of the story is going to be the 8th of March. And it's a, we have 8 different women from Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I know that they're going deep with this, and I'm so excited about the fact that like they can get this group of women together, and I can't wait for this one.
Yeah. And it looks like it's going to be actually a considerably large set of material, because they're releasing it in intervals across the next 2 full years. So they'll be done with the 4th volume. The fact that they've already greenlit this through 4 volumes because they know that we're going to eat this up with a spoon. Between June of 2019 and October of 2020, we'll be able to get all of these things.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. So, all right. So, looking it through now. So we've been handed at least our writers for the first 3 episodes that are in the first volume installment. So Jonathan Morris, familiar with that. Roy Gill, familiar with Roy Gill's work. Paul Morris, I'll have to go back and check and see cross-reference what I'm familiar with as far as Paul's contributions, but I'm sure they handed these to veteran writers. So you've got something that you can look forward to. Once again, Big Finish taking more of your money away. But the great thing is that they always offer these things up for pre-order. So you order them so far in advance. By the time it actually shows up in your download queue, you forgot that you paid for it and you just bought yourself a gift. Hooray.
Yeah, exactly.
Happens all the time.
Yeah. Also, there's, I'm sure we've mentioned this before, but Big Finish routinely has sales. I don't know that they'll be discounting this anytime soon, but it's a fantastic opportunity to download or order the cheap CD sets of some of your favorite past stories as well. So you should always be checking the Big Finish website.
CDs? What's this?
I know. How quaint. I know. What is that?
Yeah. Wow.
Just get the download. It's way cheaper.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of things that you forgot about, hey, remember Wheel in Space?
Yes, I'd mentioned that earlier.
Yeah. Remember that episode 1 issue that we have? We apparently have another of our installments in the "Hey, look what they've animated this time" story.
Yay!
This is a good thing. I've been pleased with what they've done with the animations.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it varies. You know, the style varies from time to time, but that actually keeps it from being monotonous, right?
Mm-hmm.
See, a lot of the time the animation style that they go with keeps me watching simply because I'm waiting for Archer to walk through the background.
Yes.
It does remind me of that a bit.
It has quite a bit of the of that feel to it, but that's all right though. I mean, but because nonetheless, they still, the characterizations are still fairly true. They do an excellent job of trying to match the tone of the sets from the from the reconstruction photos and such.
And so, we do have quite a bit of material from the surviving bits of Wheel in Space and photos that were taken at the time. So there's lots of background reference material. So I'm very confident the animation is going to be great.
Yeah. So again, another thing to be able to look forward to when it gets completed. Now we don't really know exactly when it's going to be completed because apparently, according to Rob Ritchie, who's one of the animators who's been working on this thing, he says, I guess I better get finished.
Yes.
It doesn't really instill us with a whole bunch of confidence about a timetable. But it's on the way, which is awesome. And
at the risk of being a terrible name dropper, Wendy Padbury happened to stop by here in Victoria, BC, where I am, a few weeks ago. She was on a cruise.
Clunk. And Haley, watch your toes on that name. Just careful.
Yeah.
I'm used to dodging around the studio.
Yeah. and we couldn't have discussed this because we wouldn't have known about it. But, I'm sure that she's going to be thrilled that this is coming out, that more people are going to get to see this story, which was her debut story.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is, again, the more that they want to do with these, the more opportunities where they want to be able to do these while we're waiting on seeing how that whole Omni rumor thing worked out.
I think we know how that worked out. They're anime. The people don't put animation money into old black and white episodes of Doctor Who unless the chances are nil of this coming back.
Mm. Well, again, well, as you were mentioning, when it comes to discussing these, whether it be with Wendy or with Fraser, am I the only one who's going to be at LI Geek next week?
Sadly, yes.
So.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully I'll get an opportunity to discuss this.
Give all my love to Ken Deep and everybody over there.
We'll do. Okay. So what's our last? Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I wouldn't say that we have to put the spoiler cone on this. We would have to just make sure that we put the that salt block. That Jay, you got that in the box? Can you pull that out?
All right. Yep. Yeah. Let me get that.
The giant, with the extra large grains.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, set that really, really lumpy crystalline salt block on the table because we're discussing something that the Mirror is reporting. And while they have admittedly had a surprisingly valid rumor accuracy record over about the past year and a half, they're still the Mirror.
There's still the Daily Mirror. There's still a garbage paper.
Yep. So they can sidle right up next to the sun, and the two of them can trade discussion of the fact that it is rumored that we won't have a Christmas episode.
Well, initially, and I think a lot of people may have misinterpreted the story more than the Mirror per se didn't use clear enough language, but of course they didn't. But there was a lot of concern that there wouldn't be any sort of holiday special, that the regular season was it and we weren't going to get anything else.
Oh, okay.
And this piggybacked on the other rumor that the next season won't arrive until 2020.
Right.
Made people very angry, including me. I would be furious if this is the case. So I just want to make this absolutely clear. Chris Chibnall at San Diego Comic-Con said they were filming a Christmas special. So
he said the words Christmas?
Yeah. Well, he said, we find ourselves filming a Christmas special. That's the quote. Now, having said that, so and there's also a director who seems to think that he directed one. So another episode exists because the sentence after we find ourselves filming another Christmas special, so that means we have 11 episodes and not 10. That's the full quote. So, right.
And I remember when we were back in July, we reported that that from the Berlin Associates, the folks who are the representatives, agent representatives for Wayne Yip,
right,
added to his CV Doctor Who Christmas special.
Right. So there's an episode that exists.
Here's my quarter, right? Putting it on the table. This is what I'm willing to bet that there is going to be a Christmas special in the sense that there is a Doctor Who episode that will come out on Christmas. I think what they're getting at saying that it's not going to be a quote unquote Christmas special is that it's not going to take place on Christmas, or it's not going to be something about, you know, robot Santas or something along those lines. They said in this article that, you know, they seem to have run out of Yuletide storylines, which is fine. Like, I mean, look at the return of Dr. Mysterio. Like, how much of that was actually Christmas?
Right.
About, like, 2 minutes of it at the beginning. It doesn't have to be about Christmas or happen on Christmas for us to get a Doctor Who Christmas special. And I think that's what's going to happen here, is that they're going to put out an episode on Christmas Day that has nothing to do with Christmas. And so people just, because clickbait, decided to write a headline like that.
Yeah. The other prevailing idea is that we'll get a holiday special of some kind. It might not be on Christmas Day, which is perfectly fine with me. But, you know, it might actually be on New Year's Day.
I'm all right with that. I'm more concerned about the delay for when the next series proper will start into its production cycle.
Well, the logic on this is that, okay, so the BBC is going to move the Christmas special to New Year's so that they can honestly say there was some Doctor Who in 2019.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how much stock I put in this, but I'll tell you something, Chris Chibnall, if you're listening, A Boxing Day special would be awesome.
It's true. That is true. They could actually teach the rest of the world what Boxing Day really
is. Boxing Day is. It's huge here in Canada. In fact, we call it Boxing Week because the sales are so spectacular the entire week.
Interesting. Well, there you have it. There's our news rundown for the week. It's got something old, something new, something rumored, something true. Hey!
I knew you'd get there at the end.
And the golden maxim, never take the Daily Mirror at face value. Never, never, never.
Yeah, there you go.
So next week, we're going to be talking about the next episode, Demons of the Punjab.
Yeah.
Very excited about this.
I'm looking forward to this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All yes, all the time.
Well, we'll see. You know, even in episodes where we thought we were going to get more yes than we did, you know, that happened.
Are you assuming it's all about yes just because it's in the Punjab? That's racist.
No, yeah. Because they've been talking up about the fact that this is going to involve her grandmother's story.
Oh, right. Yeah. You mean the actual facts around the episode. Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, you know.
But watch what happens. The grandma gets all the lines.
Just keeps cutting her off.
Graham's like, hello.
And then you got Ryan looking over at Yaz saying, yeah, it happens to me all the time.
All right. Well, this has been episode 309 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, so does anybody else now have a pating on their Christmas list?
Ooh, just a little cute little...
Wait. Pating, ting-a-ling, ting-ting-a-ling.
Eats all the lights off the tree. Yeah. And this is Kira saying, well, Dr. Medicine. Well, medicine, science, engineering, candy floss, Lego, philosophy, music problems, people, hope. Big on hope.
This is Charles saying, are you also experiencing comprehension deficiency?
And this is Haley saying, on the plus side, I now feel very well informed.
We'll see you guys next week.
And we'll see.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.